to unify our nation. No land could be half slave, half free. We wrote a proclamation. There was Lincoln, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, and John Brown. Giants all, the Union's inspiration. But the people loving freedom beat the slavery masters down. Folks like us acclaim emancipation. Can you
Benjamin Davis, the now imprisoned Negro communist leader who was elected to the New York City Council in 1945.
Treat my people so.
freedom and hold my head up high.
say that over? You don't mind if I take that down. I know, well, I can have that down.
I don't know whether I can say that.
Yeah, but I think that's important.
I feel that the any rehabilitation program in this cut over area of northern Wisconsin, upper Michigan, and northern Minnesota must be undertaken by the federal government.
Well, how will they? What will they do to regenerate this land?
Well, the they can restore the natural resources like timber. They can develop the tourist trade, and they can use the resources like low grades of iron ore, which there's a tremendous amount, both in Wisconsin and Michigan and Minnesota. And it's from Mellon, they found, they've had companies in there and they've done some exploration work and they found tremendous amount of low-grade taconite ores, part of the Gogebic Range. Mm-hmm.
Do they have taconite plants then? Is it taconite?
No, they don't have
them. They haven't developed them yet.
Mm-hmm. See, it's very, very... this work could be done other than with federal assistance. They'll give an individual, they give an individual company rights to, and loans, you know, to so they're able to operate, but for an overall rehabilitation of this area, it's got to be on a basis of federal assistance. Now there's some of these, for instance, these pulp paper companies have started reforestation. Every spring they plant thousands of trees. Well, the government could do that. And then as these trees grow, they could take the older cut out, establishing small sawmills and small factories that could produce make various items, you know, manufactured items out of wood. And then as far as the land, those that they could pay these farmers for growing trees instead of trying to make a meager living on this poor land. Here the land is heavy clay and they can't grow as far as the crops. They're a sort of a hit and miss proposition. One spring they'll get oats, and maybe the next spring rust will hit them, or they don't get a crop. So that most of the farmers in this area, they're just marginal farmers. They have to make, they get a partial living from the farm, and they have to work in woods to make the balance of a meager existence.
Mm-hmm.
Too much trapping, hunting there is. It's a wonderful a tourist area.
I see that.
Tremendous amount of lakes around here.
Did they get?
It's a far fetch, but I can't see where any kind of rehabilitation program is going to be worked out unless there's the recognized by the federal and state government to assist it. Instead of giving money to these war preparations, that here's something that they could really make a contribution. United States Forestry Congress in Washington, D.C.
Forestry?
Yes, and it was accepted there. And this fellow Ivan Brown was a he was president of the Ford Local in Iron Mountain, and the Rehabilitation Council in Upper Peninsula sent him by plane to Washington to, and he was a speaker there at this Congress, and he met with various congressmen there. They all agreed that the program was a practical program. Of course, then the mining interests began to oppose it for the reason that was that the government would take over and operate some of these mines in the interest of the people. But that's what it's got to come to.
Mm-hmm.
parent-teacher association we had to, and the subject was to was a report from the Price County Rehabilitation Committee trying to bring industry into this northern area. And there were suggestions there that everybody would welcome industry, but then how are they going to get it? They said, well, we could make broom handles, you know, and we could grow raspberries and all this and that. But nobody was hitting at the real root of the problem, that the land is poor and the resources have been depleted. Now the thing is either to bring back these resources of timber, and that's to start a tremendous reforestation program. Oh. And nobody thought of it as a socialistic. Even the superintendent of the schools, he come to me and he said, by God, he said, I'm going to have to talk with you. He said, this was a wonderful discussion, you know. And at the next meeting, they're going to continue this discussion. Short period of time, you know, you couldn't lay any basis for it, see. But it just went well. We were on, like I said, I was one of the panel for the cooperatives, you know. But as far as the cooperative extent, they can assist in the community as a community organization, helping the people or the trade union movement. I mean, that's their role. They want to live in decency, but by God, they don't know just where the answer is.
Mm-hmm. But they know it's some kind of either federal program, or they can't do it just alone.
Well, they like here we built they built a gym, a gymnasium here. Well, we had a pulpwood cutting bee, and we cut pulpwood, and then sold it to the paper company to raise funds. They raised axes and saws and. And the women served lunch, you know.
Like at the Frontier Days.
They made about $3,000 that way, just in one day. Then they had sort of a bazaars, you know, and harvest festivals. Well, altogether, they raised about $12,000 that way, because they couldn't raise enough because the tax. Ratio there, that they couldn't borrow enough because there wasn't enough valuation here.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to raise a portion of the money just through these affairs. Well, the gym is now built. But it's, I mean, there is a good healthy desire
mm-hmm.
on the part of the people to do things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
We had this, we had a Halloween party here. Well, the cooperative, we participated with the school. And Held is on the entertainment committee of this PTA. So, Wolkonski, a clever politician, he scheduled a meeting for that night, see? Well, he came there, and I asked him if he's going to distribute any literature. He said no. I said we're going to have some prizes for the children for best dressed costume. There's about 400 kids there.
Yeah.
Well, he gave $20 for $5 each for the prizes. He said that's the best political propaganda I've heard. Rather, Price County here, they don't have no Democratic ticket. Anybody wants to run for county office, they just run on a Republican ticket. They don't have candidates on the Republican ticket.
All the Republicans.
Yeah, they don't have no Democratic ticket. stories. Well, he says, there's something wrong here, he says. He said, by God, I don't know how to figure it out, he said, but there's something wrong with the system. And, well, he says, I don't know. He says, maybe we're better off than they're in Russia, you know. But there was something wrong, you know. Well, they don't get no other papers except like, you've seen the local papers here, the Finest News. And
we saw the Rice Lake News.
Rice Lake Chronotype,
whatever it was.
We've talked so many years about getting into mass organizations. And I know when we first come here, we had a darn rough time. That was just the time of the, what was her name, from Detroit there, she put a splurge about me. And, one of the local guys come to the store and he said that I was a communist, I was to get my ass the hell out of here. Just like that. Well, there was a few customers in the store, and well, I told him, I said, Ted, that if you, that's no way to talk. I said, if you feel you have something to say about, I said, you come to the annual meeting, which was the following Saturday. And they came to the meeting, they took over, they elected him as chairman, they took over the meeting, and then they wanted to bring up this question of whether I was a communist. Well, I had prepared a statement both in Finnish and English. We had a good ham dinner there, and then after the business was over, I said, we won't take up this my personal what concerns me until the business of the association is over. So they all stayed there, and then this question came up. I read the statement in Finnish, and then I read it in English. Then I asked if they had anything to say, not that now is the time to get up and say it, that I didn't want them to talk behind my back, that here was the proper place to bring it up. And you know, there wasn't one of them, not one, that got up and made any accusations. There was religious people that got up and just said how we had participated in the community here, and we had running the store right, and it was clean, and so
not one, not even that, the accuser.
It was shows up, and you talk with them. I mean, don't try to, like we've often said, we've tried to bring into a program, you know, and without realizing whether the people are going to accept it. And many times you can't go in an organization and expect that you're going to take control of it or run it. You have to be a part of it, even though you may not like certain things. Like the superintendent there, the school board there, the chairman at the last meeting, we were talking about how can we get people to attend a meeting. I said, you can't have just sort of state meetings, you know, where you talk about nothing. You got to make them interesting so that they're at the level of the people that attend. Now, for instance, that this rehabilitation business, you know, that affects the lives of these people. There was a very good, the biggest turnout they ever had. Mm-hmm. And the next meeting, they're going to continue that. The co-op, they were trying to red bait the farmers' union there. That I just said that. Poor man's patriotism is a rich man's treason. But we called a meeting there, sent out cars, we had lunch there, but not too many of the farmers turned up there.
For the
meeting there, they said, well, we've got to have the farmers union. Well, I said, the only way you're going to solve the problem is you've got to organize yourself. I said, and I told him about we had this meeting and how many attended. I said, now if you want to improve your conditions, it's up to you farmers to get organized. Nobody's going to force you in it. You've got to get organized. Well, some said that they're, how much are the dues, you know, they were worried about the money, you know. You know, it's so darn simple. I mean, their approach, how much is it going to cost, and will they strike, and... immigrants, they settled here with the idea of, not staying here, but to make a mistake and then going back to Finland.
Oh, did they? They were going back.
And, of course, this was our Clifford Co-op is the oldest co-op in the state of Wisconsin.
It is.
It was organized in 1904.
Central Co-op Wholesale doesn't want to admit it, though.
And it started out as the Farmers Industrial Association, when these big timber barons here, the Weyerhaeuser and Yaki Bissell Lumber Company, they were pitting these producers, small producers, against each other. Well, they formed this cooperative association that they would group together and sell their forest products through this Farmers Industrial Association. And they're still the safe up there from this. The sign is on their Farmers Industrial Association.
Farmers
and from
Industrial.
Then on, they decided to form a co-op. And they had the Temperance Hall here. It used to be a little town here, in a sawmill.
Yeah, a post office.
The Stripfly was a town of about 3,000 people now. Look what it is now.
In the store.
But they brought with them from the old country. They brought these traditions of the cooperative movement and the socialist movement. This hall here was donated by the... It was the built as the Socialist Hall. There's still membership cards there of all these people that today, if you confronted them with their membership card, we've got them saved up there. If you confronted those people with those membership cards, they'd say they never belonged to it.
They're still living, huh?
And then it went during the socialist split. The IWW took control of the hall, and as an aftermath of years' development, the IWWs went out of the picture, and they donated the hall to the cooperative.
Well, she really wrote it.
Machine Gun Johnson, he took the kid and threw right from the seat of the pants, right through the window, didn't even bother to open the door.
What kid?
One of the young kids that was using abusive language in the union office there.
I'll have you know there's a lady in the house. And he threw him out.
Well, there's a lot of stories, like, for instance, there was that verbal, Smokey Verbal.
This was on our, what was it, a Friday or Saturday night. We kept the office open to collect dues, you know, on payday nights. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I happened to be there alone, and there was a couple of these. Would you care
no,
for?
No, thank you.
And this young fella came in there. He was drunk. He came in there, he was using some pretty bad language, according to them. And he didn't stop when they told him that he better watch his language. Johnson says, boy, you watch, you just better watch your language around here. There's a lady in the house. And he threw him out.
Could kick him up.
Why was he called Machine Gun Johnson? Where'd he get a name like that?
I don't know.
He's a veteran. He went to, he enlisted to Spain, too.
Yeah, but they turned him back from Chicago and Minneapolis.
There was about 27 men went to Spain during the 1937 timber workers' strike, and there wasn't more than about four or five that returned.
Mm-hmm. I know my uncle was still on Terry Railfront there.
He didn't come back?
Maybe they wouldn't let him go.
He didn't.
But he wanted to go, you know. No, he went to Milwaukee and they rejected him.
Yeah. Oh, Milwaukee it was. You had to have your...
Teeth.
Some kind of teeth.
Some kind of teeth, you know.
There's nobody...
Didn't you? Up in Superior, she lost a son in Spain.
Yeah.
What was his name?
I don't know what his first name was. His name was Scandola, but I don't know his first name. I can't remember.
I don't remember it either. I knew the kid, too.
But he went to Michigan.
No, Wisconsin.
Johnson used to come in the office, you know, and he'd always offer me a pinch of snuff. I don't use the stuff. He said, when do you quit? It never failed. So I'll be darned one Christmas time, I get a package in the
you
mail.
You show them the pants they sent you?
Oh, yeah. But it's one Christmas time anyway, I got this package, you know, and there was Hershey bar box, you know, 24 bars, and it was packed with paper, and in the middle was a box of snuff. So I knew who fixed that one up. I went to Ironwood and I fixed up a package for Johnson. And I mailed it from my friend's house in Ironwood, the Pine Street address. And he knew I was from north of Ironwood, you know, where I'd have a rural route, my home. So he couldn't figure out where in the world I came from. He suspected that I had sent it, but I bought a box of powder, face powder, and a powder puff and lipstick and rouge, you know, and I fixed that up in a big package. And he opened that up in camp, you know, with all the guys around to see what in the world he got. He never offered me snuff anymore.
You know. You know, they all come to town. If they couldn't fight with anybody else, you know, they'd fight amongst themselves, you know. they just plaster each other out, you know. And, but tender-hearted, you know. Remember the time Smokey was, he was steward at the camp there, the C.M. Christensen Company, and...
Yeah.
Well, the walking boss come to the union office and said, the boys are sitting down, you know. So,
the walking boss?
Yeah.
He was they had several camps, they called him the walker, you know.
Oh. He walked from camp?
Yeah,
camp?
They call him instead of the walking boss, they call him the walker. Because he goes around and surveys these camps. Well, he went over there and, I got a hold of, the boys were in a camp, and I got a hold of Smokey, and I said, what's the trouble? Well, he said, we had a meeting last night, and he says, the boys figured they wanted a cent a foot, that's for cutting logs. And they were margarine, and they wanted butter in the bowl, see? So Smokey goes in there, and the union office, goes and sees the foreman. And he said, well, we had a meeting tonight, and, I want to tell you what was decided, that she's cent a foot and butter in a bowl, or she's down in the morning.
They didn't move
the next morning.
Well, the bowl.
Walker said, well, how the hell am I going to get butter? I said, you better go to Ironwood and pick up a couple of pieces. You know? They're not going back to work. But there's so many humorous
cent a foot. We got married. One fella come up with a package for me, and he said, this is for you, Helby. It was a rolling pin. He said, you keep that guy in line.
Well, this
was neat. They sent me a package that was about a size 52 dress in there, and the same size
bloomers.
Pink sateen bloomers with IWA in felt letters pasted on the back of the back.
Hell, we still have the pants.
I still have the pants. And there was room for expansion. I never did find out who sent those. So.
That's right, too. There was that interesting when they... Well, we couldn't get no relief from the state. They were sending these First World War veterans, these hats, you know, like mounted police hats, and old shoes, and they must have sent at least 2,000 gallons of grapefruit juice. So,
who sent that?
That was for strike relief.
Oh.
So the boys hung them along, put them on a string and hung them along the road there, you know, so people could see them, you know, there was a strike headquarters in Marinisco there. So, they were killing about four or five deer a day, you know, and gave conservation officers come, you said you can't violate the laws, you know, and then the state, Walter Berry, the state, Upper Peninsula Welfare Director came there and he said, well, it's a violation of law. So I invited him over to the cook shack, you know, just made out of tar paper and sort of a slab wood. And they had fixed up some meatballs and potatoes, you know. And, well, he said it was very good. Well, he said, unless there's relief coming, that we're going to have to get something to eat, so the boys are just going to get the meat from the woods. And then in Amasa, we had seven strike headquarters in the peninsula there. One of these was in Amasa, and they were all fishing without a license. So conservation officers come there too, and they said, well, it's violation of law. So they, well, the boys had a meeting. They said, we'll all go fishing, and they let them fill the jail up, see. So they'd come down there, and they'd take a truckload of the boys to jail. Well, keep them five, they said, all we have to stay is 5 days in jail. We'll come back to the headquarters and get something to eat. So they did that. They had the whole county jail in Crystal Falls filled. So then the sheriff come down there, and he said, well, Jesus, it's costing the taxpayers too much, he says. So they said, go ahead and fish, you know. And the time the Ku Klux Klan, they tried to drive out. They burned a cross at the Amasa Hall there. We were just having lunch, you know. And the boy said, there's a fire. But it was this cross. Somebody had put a cross near the strike headquarters. So there was one, he was a Catholic. He'd been an intern, he was a lumberjack, but he'd been an intern at one time in the Mayo Clinic. And he was in charge of the sanitation at the strike headquarters. And he said, don't touch it, it's forming a cross. And one of the lumberjacks said, cross my ass, that's the Ku Klux Klan. The time we pulled this patent timber company out there, we walked about 20 miles. We started 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was along the railroad tracks. See, they were, called railroad camps, you know. They were all along this railroad. And there was 13 camps in this distance, 20 miles. It was 2 o'clock in the morning before we had pulled these camps out, you know. Woke them up at the dead of night, gave them a talk, and told them to haul their ass out, you know, in the morning, you know, that the strike is on. And this Joe, mosquitoes were, it was in June, and he was a stocky, he was proud of the fact that, you know, he was a barrel chested, they call him, and when you call him, hey, double breasted, you know, he'd perk up, you know. I remember the time he read the Midwest Labor, and he had it upside down, he said, Jesus, this is a good paper. And, but the mosquitoes on his back, you know. He had his shirt off. He just had a wool, one of these heavy wool shirts on. He took that off because it was warm, you know, and mosquitoes on his back, and it didn't bother him. But he always used to carry about $400 or $500 of money on him, you know. But he wouldn't buy like snuff. He'd always bum it, you know. But in Pulley, we went to a Pulley camp. And the foreman came out, he had a 30-30 rifle leveled out. He said, if you come one more foot, I'm going to shoot. And this Joe, he walked up to this foreman, he grabbed a hold of the barrel of the gun, jerked it out of his hand, and slapped the foreman in the face.
Just walked up.
I met those railroad cars in Iron River when they were trying to ship in scabs to break the strike.
He liked that job, you know. He always, he said, I'm going to get me a good piss on club. You know, and the railroad union said, well, they can't they're shipping scabs in from the Dakotas, you know. They're telling that there's woods work here in the upper Michigan, they wanted labor there. Well, he'd always meet the freights over there, and he'd give them a talk, you know, just in very, if you know what the hell's good for you, wheel it, or
with his club,
then he'd show them the club, you know. And it was, he didn't have to give him a long speech, you know. But he'd come and tell me, he says, boy, there's four or five scabs on there, but
they take one look at
send them on, send them on their way, you know. But the most militant, you know, there's a lot of wobblies came from out west,
mm-hmm.
came from Idaho out there, and they really participated militantly in the strike there.
Matthew and Kent were two young fellows that got framed for
Governor Murphy, before he went out of office there, he pardoned them, you know.
We did?
Dynamite was that bridge.
Was that one of Hank's cases? So it was,
yeah.
It was a tremendous campaign.
That was, Hank was...
Hank was on the
defense...
Yeah,
on the defense...
Harry K. Bay and Irene Paul was...
How long
and
were
Greenberg, wasn't Greenberg on it then, that Greenberg from, where was he from?
And there was this Dr. Wallace Burke, we went down to see
Murphy. Was Greenberg a lawyer?
Yeah, from Eveleth or somewhere up in the range there, anyway, he was from there. But he came on a lot of those, Hank sent him down.
We had a heck of a time controlling the, sometimes the violence, you know, because the boys would get bitter.
Mm-hmm.
But that really developed into quite a national campaign that free those two boys. Well, this Mackey is he's secretary of the Timber Workers Union local up in Saratoga, Wyoming now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So he's stayed right with the union other places been.
In the damn woods. They just sat there and built a fire and sat around drinking beer and
knocked the deer off when they were by.
They let the white men drive them in?
Sure. They knew exactly where they'd go, you see.
A couple guys from Milwaukee came up here and they just hunted along the road, you know. So they went in for coffee, you know. And then they went, the lady there said, was her relative, said that there's a deer in the orchard there by the house. Well, they were going to shoot it from the downstairs window, but they couldn't get it open, you know, in the winter time. So they went upstairs and they opened the window, and it was on the orchard, and they, right from the house, they shot it. Took it back to Milwaukee.
Oh, the riggers.
And they didn't go off the road. They didn't go in the woods at all, just along the road, you know. And this one they shot from the house.
Well, there was a couple of them that last winter. You know, the local people were actually kind of provoked because they were running around all over, you know, and here the deer were right along the road here in people's orchards.
Yeah, so what do you think you're doing?
No point in looking at me. We won't get any answers here. No, the idea for this conference developed on the last trip around the state, and the general idea when the conference proposed it was to give an opportunity for the comrades in the North to get together to participate in a collective way in some of the party discussion toward the convention. And some of those who expressed an opinion asked that two things be done. One, they would like to hear from some of the comrades from Milwaukee, but they would not like to hear from them at too great length, so that they would have a chance to speak. They must have had some experiences in the past.
I'd be surprised.
So one thing that we had thought, just in kicking around, that we wanted to propose was that I would take not very long to deal with a few current developments, the result of the elections, Egypt, Hungary, some of the current legislative and political tasks. And Fred would take a certain amount of time to tell something about the inner party discussion in the rest of the state. And develop some of his ideas on it. And then just to throw the floor open for a general discussion. Was pose it and see what the Congress thinks about the idea.
You want to take up the press, right? Yeah. Don't you think so? The circulation and the finances? And what about the convention call?
Yeah, well, that ought to be taken in together with the discussion.
The draft constitution, we haven't got enough copies to hand around.
No, but it'll be in the next issue of the discussion board.
So we have just one order of business or a couple of a couple things on? I mean, just one point or a couple?
Everything cent a pound. If they sold a pound of nails, there'd be 1 cent profit. A pound of tobacco, that was 1 cent. And then they, one of the managers bought a, what are the,
they bought so much pure waste that they stored it in the farmer's warehouses. I mean, barns, sorry. Didn't have a warehouse.
Pureless tobacco.
Yeah.
He didn't know how much a carload.
those were the days when the order books, you know, where they had 50 pounds of salt fish.
they'd buy supplies like that, and there would be a
barrel of toast and.
Well, how, how did they load that fearless up? They must have got the women chewing the bag.
Well, this was quite, you know, it's a lumbering, other, you know,
whatever you do.
Come on, babe, you want to go out?
Whatever you do, don't buy the fearless tobacco up here.
It's better if it's old.
When was it they had a period they wouldn't allow women to vote in the meetings there? That, of course, sprung from this tradition from the Finnish church, you know.
Well, the co-ops around that place, women
they wouldn't allow the women to vote. It wasn't
you mean they don't
years,
vote now even?
Till they moved it. They allowed the women to vote.
One vote to a family.
One vote to a family. Each one that has a share, whether it's a man or woman, I mean,
yeah, well, there it is.
They have a vote.
It just happens that it's
one share to a family.
Yeah. But you have a right, because we use it.
We buy
stock and everything. All the stock companies should be reorganized on the Rosedale plan that only one vote, depending on how much stock you have. No matter how much stock.
Be discussion then after Fred.
I'm a little bit at a loss how to handle this business of the discussion. Because we haven't got too much information as to what you people think up north, and even what the people think around Milwaukee, as yet. Because generally, this hasn't been a year like an ordinary year before a convention, you know, where we're going along in the framework of a policy we've been going on for a long time. We start out with a discussion and slam bang, you get the 20th Congress with a whole lot of new ideas. Just begin to get digest that, then Khrushchev's secret report leaks out through the State Department, and everybody goes nuts over the question of Stalin, you see. And then people begin to get on the even keel with that a little bit, and along comes the Hungarian situation, you see. So we start out with one set of, one kind of discussion, we end up with another one where we're forgetting everything that went before. I mean, that seems to be the experience that we're having down below there. We're just simply floating around like a rudderless ship to a large degree, and some of the people who are trying to give a rudder to the ship you're not quite convinced that they're steering it quite in the right direction. It's a kind of a mess that impresses me, at least, that the whole business is a kind of a mixed up mess. And for me, the only thing that keeps me from getting upset is, the knowledge, for one thing, that whatever is happening in Hungary or Russia or any place else, that we know what kind of SOBs the capitalist class is in this country, and we know what kind of a state that the common people are in, and we know we're never going to be able to sleep in the same bed without the big boys having all the covers and our freezing in the middle of the winter time. So a sense of reality, a sense of the need for a change for socialism, a fundamental change in our society, a sense of the basic right of the cause that we're fighting for is the thing that enables me, at least, not to be too much upset by all these different things. I think our party is in the most serious situation it's ever been in since at least 1928 or 29. Around that time, the party was pretty well torn to pieces in a factional fight and arguments that were going on. The membership was way down to 7,000 members in the entire country. We only had about 70 members in the southern half of Wisconsin, and the people up here were in the Minnesota district. We went into the huge mass struggles in 1930 with about 10 or 15 active party members. The club I belonged to, a branch or what they call a nucleus back in those days when I joined the party, had about 30 members on paper, and there was four of us came to a meeting. And we were in quite a bad situation then. I would say a worse situation than we are now. That's another thing. A little historic perspective holds a person from getting too much excited and alarmed at the way things have been going in the movement. But we are in a situation today where I feel that the membership has got to take a hold of things and no longer rely upon any one person or any group of persons to lead them out of the situation. The membership has to do this because I think in the membership there is the basic feeling, because the membership is mainly made up of workers and farmers and white collar people and so on, people who aren't wealthy and aren't running the show in the country. And they feel where their interests are, but the membership has to express themselves. And in this discussion of the book is the time when it has to be done. Now, what has been the history of the discussion? This discussion that we're engaged in, we've been going on with for several years. There's a whole lot of questions that have been raised repeatedly by the comrades around Owen, for example. On the question of the way we work, the kind of policies we have, a criticism of the policy in the Farmers Union, things that we were doing, as being the kind of thing that put us out on a limb and enabled Ken Holmes and the others to saw the limb off. Well, that same sort of criticism has been going on in the cities and working the trade unions. You know, that policies are being made in the National Committee or in the State Committee, being made by the leading committees, instead of being made as they should be by the whole membership. Well, we have faith and had faith in our party and our movement and our principles of Marxism-Leninism, our form of organization of democratic centralism, and our international solidarity, and in the infallibility of the Soviet Union and Comrade Stalin, and we have sort of this all held us all along, you see. Yet we were beginning to make changes. And a matter of fact, some of our discussions contributed a lot to the 20th Congress discussion and some of the ideas on special roads to socialism and the possibilities of peaceful constitutional development of socialism and many ideas like this that we were kicking around and trying to find a solution for. Well, the first real phase of discussion, I think, was precipitated by Comrade Dennis's report. Now, Comrade Dennis's report immediately created a division of opinion in our movement. I, for one, was very much dissatisfied with his report. For one, while we were away, we were discussing and thinking over these things, that the party has to change drastically, that we are getting isolated from the people. We have to change our way of working and form of organization drastically. This kind of was getting pretty common thinking among us. But when Comrade Dennis pinpointed the last 10 years, I felt it was wrong, because I felt that some of our mistakes had gone back from the very beginning of the party, our ways of looking at things and our ways of doing things. Well, also one effect of Comrade Dennis putting it the last 10 years was sort of automatically to engender the reaction in Comrade Foster. Well, holy smokes, this is the time when, this 10 years is the time when I've been in the leadership of the movement. I'm the guy that led the fight against Browder, and what Dennis is doing is aiming at me. Well, I mean, I don't say that's the way Foster reasoned, but from the way he acted, it seemed to sort of feel that way. And I think it was unfortunate again that only 10 years limit was put upon the thing. There was a lot of dissatisfaction with Dennis's report. We felt he was sitting on two stools trying to sit on two stools at the same time, and that the report was too negative. It dealt mainly with errors and not enough with accomplishments of the movement. Well, that was the first phase of discussion. In the course of this, some forces began to sort of line up in the party, especially in New York and in the National Committee on these questions, with Foster defending and coming out very strongly that mistakes were made as a result of objective situation, and sort of that the mistakes themselves didn't fully explain our isolation, but the objective situation, that is the attacks of the capitalists and the whole Cold War and things like this, rather explained our situation, that the party hadn't really made these mistakes and the like of that. And so things began to line up one way or the other. And then, of course, this whole question of Stalin, and the way this thing was put, I think the Soviet Union was wrong in the way they presented this. The party was wrong over there. I mean, the leaders of the party were wrong in the way they threw this whole thing out. I mean, why should we have to learn from our own capitalist newspapers? Why shouldn't we learn from Pravda or from the Daily Worker first, and let the capitalists pick it up afterwards? Have a situation where even the delegates from other countries that were at the Congress didn't know about it until they got home. And even doubted, and to this day, we don't know if we've got an authentic copy of the Khrushchev secret report, you see. It creates a certain amount of irritation with the people. Secondly, among our membership around Milwaukee, a lot of them, there's a division of opinion on this. There are people who say that as far as they're concerned, Khrushchev is nothing but a big old phony. They don't really put too much stock in him. And they feel that he's a blundering dumbbell, just slopping around the world and creating all kinds of trouble. Well, that's one point of view, you see. There is a feeling, and I share this feeling at least, that first place, I think it was wrong in the way the stuff was released. In the second place, I feel that the whole approach to Stalin was too one-sided and too negative. It minimized the real contributions that Stalin made towards socialism and towards the peace of the world. And even when he was making mistakes and bad things were resulting, good things were also coming. And thirdly, I think that these people all shared in the mistakes that Stalin made. Now, they can't convince me that they had their heads chopped off, they said something about it. I think that one of the early things we learn about criticism, the place to start is at home with yourself. We learn that from the Negro people continually. They never criticize you without criticizing themselves first and telling where they're wrong. And then they gently tell you where maybe they think you might possibly be wrong. And there's no self-criticism here and so on. Well, the Soviet leadership has to answer to the people, to their party, for these questions. I'm convinced that they're strong enough, they're powerful enough, and that the people are educated enough in the spirit of socialism so that if these are errors, they will be corrected. Well, even in our own movement here, the insistence of some of our leadership on accepting the Khrushchev version of Stalin's sins and of the whole Stalin era, and I think was a mistake right from the very beginning. I personally do not accept even Bill Foster's criticism of Anna Louise Strong's latest book unqualifiedly. When Bill says that she's too gentle on Stalin, well, I think Bill's gone overboard to accepting the Khrushchev version of the thing. Well, so much for that. That's only my personal opinions on this, but it's like a Hearst sheet, and well, this seemed very confusing, and it was very confusing, and here the National Committee slipped up very badly. They didn't give any leadership. They drifted around of leadership in our movement, and as a result, this thing was pushed around and kicked around and sort of drifted. Yet the effect of this discussion, as aimless as it seemed, was some progress in my opinion. I believe that the draft resolution was progress over Dennis's report and the reports of Weiss and Lightfoot and Ben Davis that were made. You know, they were all printed. I believe the draft resolution was something. It incorporated the correct criticism, some of the correct criticism that Foster made, that it is necessary to consider objective situation and necessary to consider the fact that the party was virtually underground, that the leadership was almost decapitated, being in jail and unable to function properly and changing continually in the districts as well as in the center. All of these things, I think some of these things, it was a much more positive document, the draft resolution, than the stuff that had gone before. And I believe the draft resolution is a basis for going forward and for making the kind of changes, beginning to make the change we need to do so that our party can play a much more effective role in the country than it has, than it is doing now or has been in the last few years. So we can break our isolation from the workers and the farmers and Negro people and the rest of the progressive masses in the country. Well, now we're discussing the draft resolution.